Hi, I'm Valerie, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains. Welcome to The Beauty Brains, a show where real cosmetic chemists answer your beauty product questions and give you an insider's look at the cosmetics industry. This is episode 359. I'm your host, Valerie George, and with me today is Perry Romanowski. Hi, Perry.
Hello, Valerie. So good to be here.
Good to see you again. On today's show, we're going to cover lots of questions, including, what do you think of the Aeonia age-defying serum? Mainly, the claim that it was tested in space. Why is hair mousse sold in the form of a foam? Say that three times fast.
Form of a foam.
What ingredients in makeup make it waterproof or at least sweat-resistant or water-resistant? What happened to toned products? Why are they so hard to find? And why would Henkel discontinue them? Finally, what are companies using instead of silicones and sulfates? But first, that inane chit-chat.
Valerie, it does not look like you're in your usual spot.
Well, what is usual? Because I've only been in Texas for a very short amount of time. And within that short amount of time, I've been traveling.
And you get to go to all the fun places, right?
Well, I get to go all these places to work while you get to go all the places to play.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'm at home right now. But you're in the East Coast, huh?
I am in Maryland, specifically Baltimore, Maryland.
You know, that state name is the answer to the joke, where are the most weddings in the United States?
Maryland. Oh, my goodness. That's awful. But I will tell you, actually, you know, there's quite a bit of cool stuff to see here. Edgar Allan Poe is here.
Wow.
In his eternal
like
resting
still?
Place.
Oh, okay.
Sure. There's a lot of history here, going back to the 1600s and 1700s.
I remember there are some cool like cemeteries, I think, if I recall, with like really old headstones.
John Wilkes Booth is buried here in his family cemetery.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And they have that fort. That's actually where Francis Scott Key wrote the Star-Spangled Banner, at that fort.
Yeah. And there are a lot of runners here, which is pretty cool to see.
Well, excellent. Well, I hope you're having fun there.
Yeah, it's been a good time. Well, I only came a couple days ahead. I have
sure.
to be here working this week, so I'm working away now, but I did get a chance to walk around town, eat some really good food, enjoy watching the runners, and just enjoy the sightseeing, including the Peabody Library, which is stunning inside.
PBD, is that like Pabst Blue Ribbon?
Well, I think that's how they say Peabody in New England.
Oh,
so it's been beat gotcha. Into my head by Mr. Cosmetic Chemist.
Sure.
That's how you say Peabody. It's Peabody.
Ah, gotcha. Well, that sounds fabulous.
Well, Stash has still not come around, so my only conclusion is he is definitely dead.
I can't imagine that's true. I prefer...
He's being held hostage somewhere?
No, he got picked up by somebody, and they're like, I want to give you a home, you poor little outdoor cat who needs some loving. And he's got a home right now, and right now he's probably frolicking and resting on somebody's couch.
Now, I could believe that because he is so friendly. He's such a friendly,
yes.
outgoing cat.
Exactly. I haven't seen my outdoor cat, Stew, in a few days, but I just imagine like he's in somebody's house hanging out.
Hiding somewhere.
Well, yeah. He's friendly, you know, so somebody could, I mean, I can pick him up. He's one of the ones I can pick up.
Yeah, Stash lets me hold him.
Well, these outdoor cats, they sure do take up a lot of our attention, don't they?
They sure do.
Hey, do you know what I was doing? I was doing a little work on the website, and I remembered that I have access to a phone line that has set up a voicemail.
What? You mean a voicemail where people like our loyal listeners can leave audio questions for us?
Exactly. I know we tell everyone you want to do get your voice on the show, you would just record it on your phone and then you email to us. That seems kind of complicated. Now, we're going to have a line where you can call the line.
We're not going to answer it.
We're not going to answer it. You just leave a message. But we will get those messages, and then they can be on the show. So it's a lot easier. Now, since we don't know how many people will be using it, we're going to roll it out to our patrons first. So if you're a patron, you'll be able to just call this number and leave us a question and get your question on the show later. Well, that's how it'll work. Maybe later we'll roll it out to the entire audience. But for now, you can call the brains.
Wow, very cool. So if you're a patron listening to this and you're super excited, we're going to roll that news out to you on the Patreon platform. Stay tuned. Well, let's head over to beauty news, as if that wasn't beauty news enough.
Valerie, it came across the feeds where I saw that Dove, the brand Dove, was joining a call to protect tweens from adult skincare concerns. And actually, I listened to a podcast by Mintel. They are a market research firm. And they did a whole show about Generation Alpha, which I guess that's what they're calling people after Z.
Oh, goodness.
That's right. I guess they got to the end of the letters with Z, and now they're going to Alpha. So anyway, these Generation Alpha, who were born after 2010, this is the new generation, they apparently love their skincare, and they love their anti-aging products, and that seems troubling to a brand like Dove or to adults who would say, hey, kids' skin do not need anti-aging active ingredients.
A 10-year-old doesn't need to look 10 years younger. I think that's actually a quote from their ad, right?
That was one of the quotes from their ads. And it made me wonder, does a brand like Dove really have a place here to be able to be discouraging people from buying products? Because it seems like there's, I don't know, a conflict of interest here, because Dove wants to sell products. And you know, they have Dove Baby, right? They have Dove Regular, Dove for Men.
They don't have Dove Tween, though.
They don't have Dove Tween. That's true. So I guess they make a conscious effort not to give skincare products to teens. Even though in their TikTok video that they put together, I'll link in the show, they say young kids need three things in skincare. They need a cleanser, a sunscreen, and a light moisturizer. And then I'm listening to that, and I'm like, really? Couldn't they just use water?
Oh, come on, Perry.
No. I was just kidding. Yes, I mean, do they really need moisturizer? Tweens need moisturizer? Mm. I mean, maybe, like, certainly if they have the problem, but anti-acne products, certainly, that's, I could have used that when I was younger. But
they don't need moisturizer with retinol or vitamin C.
Right, or niacinamide. Right, they don't need that. So there seems to be a conflict here between what a brand could say about it and discouraging consumers from using their products.
I think this is actually a great move on the part of Dove, because kids don't really have any business using these advanced peptides, these exfoliating acids, these skin brighteners, these things that can do a lot within the skin. Their skin just doesn't need it. And from a toxicology perspective, products are developed and formulated and designed with a certain demographic in mind. And the reality is, teens have different skin. They're different sizes than an adult person.
Right.
And especially, you know, younger, tiny kids, they just really shouldn't be using something that toxicologically just isn't designed for them. And so while Dove isn't necessarily capturing this market and doing, you know, parents a favor by saying, gee, you know, kids don't need to use this kind of stuff, I do think it was clever on their end, because people are really fed up with tweens trashing Sephora.
They are, Sephora and Ulta. I recall we talked about that in a previous show. It does not surprise me from a brand like Dove, however. They were one of the first brands to switch to all size models for their commercials and things.
They were.
Yeah. And so they have been sort of in front of a lot of these social movements. Here is just another example of it. I just think it's kind of sneaky of Dove to get their brand name in front of tweens. So when they are in their 20s, then, oh, we're going to use Dove. So.
Hence marketing cleverness.
Right. Which I'm always suspicious of. Speaking of suspicious, did you see this Daily Mail piece about hair Botox?
Is hair Botox a miracle? You know, I never think of Daily Mail for my beauty secrets and hacks. I usually think of them for my celebrity gossip, and an excellent way to get photos of the Duchess of Cambridge, now known as the Princess of Wales. But this article in here says that there is a 350-pound hair Botox treatment to defrizz locks, and this 57-year-old was so pleased, the results were instant.
Wait, 350 pounds? How do they lift that?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wait, no.
Anyway, this woman has never considered Botox, but she was tempted by this new hair treatment to turn her hair that looks like bird's nest, as she
professed. It's a little frizzy. It's a little frizzy. There are lots of pictures of it, and it admittedly, it's frizzy, but come on. She just didn't, like, style it, right? It was just, she let it go frizzy on purpose, right?
Well, probably using hair color. I don't think this lady's a natural blonde, if you know what I mean. I think she's lightening her hair a bit. And she doesn't want to look like Hagrid from Harry Potter, her quote. So she took the plunge at a Mayfair salon of Joe Hansford, hairdresser to the Queen. So that was very, I'm guessing, the late Queen. Or maybe the current queen, I don't know. So that was reassuring for her, because I don't know if Queen Camilla has really great hair.
Is she Queen Camilla?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, I did not know she got the upgrade.
Yeah, she sure did.
Oh, I don't follow the royals very
you
well.
You need to be looking at Daily Mail a lot more, Barry.
Apparently. All right, but what do I need to be looking to get this hair Botox, though? Like, what is this hair Botox?
Well, I just think the name's a little misleading. I mean, I guess it's not misleading in the sense that Botox, you know, makes you look younger because it freezes your muscles, relaxes them, which helps reduce kind of the deep divides within your skin.
Right.
But I don't like that it's Botox in the sense that, what does that even mean, right? This caviar oil and, you know, whatever gook is applied to the hair, and then the next thing you know, she's led to a state-of-the-art heater for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And then her hair looks good.
Right. You have to say, at the end of it, her hair looks good. I just think
her hair would have looked like that if it were blow-dried with the silicone oil.
Right, exactly. So what does this Botox have to do with any of it? It just, at $350, come on, you could use a nice leave-in conditioner and get that effect.
350 pounds, Perry.
Oh, that's right, pounds.
Do you know how many dollars 350 pounds is in today's market value?
$400?
It's about $450.
Whoa.
This treatment better be lasting months for that kind of money. That's Brazilian blowout money.
Yeah, well, I mean, or Japanese straightening system money, right?
Yeah. It never really says what this treatment is and how long the results last, so I'm just a little suspicious of it.
Well, yeah, they're using the term Botox because it's not using botulism toxin like the stuff you get injected in your face. It's just like a conditioner.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. And the fact that it instantly works, that's any blowout by a salon professional.
Yeah, but with all the work they're doing, like, yeah, it's, no kidding, your hair's straight. Wow, I don't think you needed to spend that much.
I ought to do the next time I'm in England. I ought to get this.
Oh, yeah, you ought to get it. Maybe we'll have a special donate here to get Valerie's hair Botoxed.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, Valerie, there was something I forgot to mention about last episode.
Oh, really?
Remember,
what is it?
Remember last episode we chatted about those hair blow dryers?
Yes.
And you were skeptical of them, but you did say that you went to a salon, you had used one, and the results were amazing.
Yes.
Right? And my take on it was more like, come on, it's a hair dryer. Like, come on, nothing could be that amazing, right?
Uh-huh.
So my friend was listening to the show.
Okay.
And you convinced her that she should go buy one of these things.
Oh, my gosh. I landed a sale for the bioprogramming
like,
people.
She was listening to our conversation, and I don't know how you walk away from that conversation with that decision, but that's what happened. So
wow.
Go figure.
So when is she going to give us feedback?
I, I don't know. I'm going to see her in April.
If she doesn't give us feedback, we'll know what that means.
I don't think
she's hoping we forget.
We'll see. I'll ask her about it next time I see her. But I'm curious, like, how could people listen to that conversation? Because I edited the show and I listened to it again. And I'm like, didn't it come down to us both kind of saying, like, yeah, it's probably not worth it. But your caveat was, but the results were amazing. I'm like, yeah, well, it's a
hair dryer. You got to try it if someone says it's amazing.
I guess so. Yeah. All right.
Wow. Whoa. Well, that feels pretty cool. And with that, let's head over to answer some beauty questions.
The first one comes to us from a patron, Lorena.
Lorena says, hello, Valerie and Perry. Can you go over this newish product from Aeonia, age-defying serum? Mainly, the claim is that it was tested in space, and I'm not seeing the relevance to us since I'm not planning to reside in space in my lifetime. Me too. It's like, I don't need to go to Mars. What is so special about the ingredients and which ones are actually actives? I have not heard of Bacillus lysate. Is this a new one? I'm copying the long list below, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and we do appreciate whenever you have a question that you send us the ingredient list. That's handy, or at least a link to it. That's fun. All right, I'm looking at this. Is this something we talked about before? I remember something else being developed about space, or this might have been a news article or something, huh?
It's possible. I do know the brand, and they actually did test the Bacillus lysate in space, like the outer space. So that fact is very true.
So this isn't just made-up marketing where you say, oh, I went into a high balloon, and I'm in the balloon, and I do the test, and that counts as space? No, they actually went into outer space?
Well, the ingredient went to outer space.
Right.
They did, although that would have been pretty cool. But the ingredient definitely went to outer space and had some science-y stuff.
Okay, well, let's talk about the sciencey stuff. So the first one is, what is the relevance to going into space? And my answer to that is, I have no clue. There's nothing that I can imagine in space would make a difference whether you're tested there or here for things like moisturization or anti-wrinkle or hyperpigmentation. I don't know what the space piece does. I mean, it does have marketing effect because, hey, you're the brand that went into space. So there's that, which is kind of cool. I mean, it's cool. I don't know if it's relevant, but I don't think people are going to be putting this on the moon, but maybe.
Well, we are trying to go back to the moon, aren't we? So you never know. I was wondering if, you know, some of these ingredients like these lysate and extremophiles grow in really harsh conditions. Do you think perhaps this is an extremophile issue where this particular strain of bacteria was in space, which is not kind to life at all, as
right.
we know.
Yeah.
And therefore, maybe the fact that it could survive in space is beneficial for skin. I'm just hypothesizing, trying to make a stretch here.
You're throwing stuff out there, and I appreciate it. I like that. I just think if this went up into space, it wasn't like it was exposed to space. It was like in a canister.
In a spaceship.
Sure, sure. But let's look at some of these other actives. This is a pretty standard serum, water, glycerin, caprylic triglycerides. So you have emollients, you have humectants. As far as active ingredients, they have the tetrahexyldecyl ascorbate.
It's an oil-soluble vitamin C, ester, which slowly absorbs into skin and converts to vitamin C over time.
Theoretically, yeah.
Hey, there are some vendor-published studies about this.
Absolutely. Well, then they have ferulic acid, which has been shown to help with quenching free radicals in the skin.
Yep.
So maybe it helps with UV damage. Then, of course, they have niacin, they have resveratrol, and peroxidine HCl. All of these are pretty standard anti-aging-ish ingredients, which do a variety of things.
I also love the hydrolyzed jojoba esters. Those, in general, make skin very soft.
Yes, but again, another emollient kind of a thing. So that's more aesthetic, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Then they have, of course, their Bacillus lysate, which is they take bacteria, and then they chemically chop it all up, and so you're just left with goo, which apparently is okay in space too. So the question is, what's special about the ingredients? It's a story. It probably is going to be an antioxidant, so it's going to have that effect. It's going to be emollient. As far as serums go, I think this is probably as good a serum as any serums. And so, yeah, tetrahexylascorbate is in a lot of stuff. So is furulic acid. I'm not so sure that the lysate being a space is really relevant, but hey, it's a nice story.
Exactly.
Speaking of stories, look at Valerie, we have an audio question about hair mousse. You know, before we go into this, when I was working at Alberto Culver, our founder, Leonard Lavin, he always told a story that he was the guy who brought hair mousse to the United States. He was traveling in the early 1980s, he was traveling in Europe, and he saw this hair mousse product, and he's like, I got to sell that in the United States. And so apparently Tresemme mousse was one of the first mousses in the United States.
Do you believe that story? Because I always heard a lot of stories about someone inventing the bowl cut, and I'm like, that sure. is not true.
There's so much, hyperbole and stories in the cosmetic industry, it's hard to know what is true. All right, let me play this question from Valerie. Hey, not you, a different Valerie.
Nope, it was me.
Hi, I'm a huge fan of your guys' podcast, and I did have a question that I was hoping you could answer. My question is involving hair mousse. I was wondering, and I did look on Google to see if I could find anything, and wasn't able to return any results. I was wondering about hair mousse. What is the rationale for hair mousse being in the form of foam? Because I don't know, I've talked to some of my friends, and it seems that most of us, when we apply our mousse, by the time it ends up actually hitting our hair or getting into our hair, it's not really foam anymore. So we were just curious about that method of turning the product into foam, if that's actually necessary or if there's like a historical reason for that. So yeah, we were just curious about that. And then also if there's any alternatives, like more eco-friendly alternatives, if the foaming aspect of mousse is not necessary, since yeah, by the time it usually gets to my hair, it's usually more of like a pasty gel or cream anyway. So I was just wondering if there's some alternative that we could be using that does not involve aerosol. Thanks so much.
Mousse being in the form of a foam, is that really necessary? And why are we doing an aerosol thing here?
Well, from a practical perspective, I guess there is no rationale for a styling polymer being delivered in a mousse over a gel or a cream of sorts, because if you took all the air out of the mousse, it would just be a very thin emulsion type liquid that would have the styling polymer in it, and you could put it all over the hair. But
I have actually made mousse, the Tresemme mousse, actually, and I've made that liquid. And indeed, it's a little bit thicker than, say, coffee or tea, but it's not quite as thick as, say, something like syrup.
So it's like milk.
Yeah, milk-ish.
Milk
yeah,
you wouldn't would want to so. Drink, whole milk.
It would be, you're right. It would be non-potable milk, exactly.
Exactly. Well, I think there are a lot of other special reasons to use a hair mousse over a gel or a cream. This is because a hair mousse, once you take all that air out of it, is actually a pretty thin liquid, whereas a gel or a cream is a little bit thicker and might provide a little bit more of a coating to the hair fiber. And so depending on your hair type and the style that you're looking for and the feel that you're looking for on the hair, you might not want a gel or a cream. That lightness of a mousse is a really great format. But if the mousse didn't have the air, it's pretty thin. Imagine trying to put milk all over your hair. So the fact that it can be in a foam and have this structure to it, one, is fun. It's texturally awesome to squash your fingers into mousse and to crush it. But it makes it a little bit easier to distribute all over the hair fiber.
Especially for longer hair people, like short hair, it's putting a styling gel through your hair is easy enough, but if it's longer, it gets a little harder to get all your hair.
Now, the downside is to a foam, it has to be compressed into an aerosol can, and to get it out, it requires the use of propellant, such as 152A, butane, propane, or DME, which I think just stands for dimethyl ether. I can't remember the name for it.
That's right, dimethyl ether, yeah.
An EU-based propellant. It can also be found in the U.S. So that's the unfortunate part, is it has to use these really volatile compounds that go into the air. In the United States, a mousse can only contain 6% volatile compounds because it's a styling product.
Thanks, California.
Yeah, thank you, California. It's actually not a United States regulation. That's a really good point, Perry. It's a California regulation, but because every brand sells in California, they just follow this rule that a mousse is limited to 6% of volatile organic compound content. In the EU, VOCs are less of a restrictive concern in cosmetic products, so I believe they're used higher there. So that being said, they're not exactly super eco-friendly once they're compressed into this can, because the gas basically just goes out into the atmosphere. So as far as eco-friendly alternatives to foam, you would have to go for an ultra-thin styling lotion. I mean, ultra-thin. Alternatively, there are these thin liquids that can be used to hold curly style that have a foamer pump on them, like those foaming hand soaps.
Right, so the aerosol-free mousse versions.
Exactly. Now, the liquid won't be exactly the same, but for the most part, you should be able to get a really soft style for your hair. So I would look for those aerosol-free foam pumps specifically for styling products.
Yeah, those could be a more ecologically friendly option because it's not going to have the propellant, but it does take more work for you because you got to pump it.
And it uses more plastic that's not going to get recycled, whereas the aluminum from an aerosol can is likely to be recycled because there's this intrinsic value to the aluminum alloy in the can. So lots to weigh there.
It gets a little complicated. Also, I think it's a little overblown how much of an impact these have on the atmosphere. We're not talking about a huge amount of gases let in, especially in comparison to cars or airplanes or other things. For some reason, the cosmetic industry gets vilified here. I think because it's a easier target to motivate people, and it's an easy change, like, oh, you can't use a mousse, use a styling gel. But I think, you know, aerosols are not as bad as they're made out to be from an environmental standpoint. But I'm just chatting into the wind here because I don't think that's going to be a popular opinion.
Perry, I'll bring you to the next California Air Resources Board meeting and we can tell them that. We'll quote this episode.
Yeah, they can just get the transcript if they're a patron.
Well, right. Let's move on to our next question.
Hey, Valerie and Perry. My question is about waterproof eyeliner because my eyes tear a lot. I have found my staples, but would like to try new products. I would like to know what ingredients in makeup make it waterproof or at least sweat resistant or water resistant. I usually use waterproof liquid eyeliner, but would like to start applying an eyeliner to my waterline and thinking about trying a gel eyeliner. Any suggestions? I always get a chuckle listening to you both, how you interact with each other. You have a cute sense of humor. That's my sense of humor, right? That's the cute one, or no?
Maybe.
Or yours. Yeah. Anyway, I also love hearing the kittens at the end of the show. Keep up the great work, Becky. Well, thanks, Becky. I have to be honest with you. The waterline, what is the eyeliner on the waterline? Where's the waterline?
The waterline is it's basically right above your lower lash line. So it's like kind of like on the inside of your eye. So when your eye shuts, your water lines shut together like this.
So that
it's
that
the inner rim
there
of your eye.
And people put stuff there?
Oh yeah, I put eyeliner there all the time.
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Dangerous.
I didn't realize you wouldn't know what that is.
I honestly have not looked into a lot of eye makeup formulating, and so
nor do you use them. Well, as an aside, do you remember someone asked us about that brand 2020 Beauty with the mascara designed by ophthalmologists? And
oh,
we
sure,
were ripping
sure.
on it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to be a total jerk. Let me go check it out. Well, I did buy it. This is a waterproof mascara. And at first I liked it, but now I don't like it because it crumbles on my face and it's waterproof, so I can't get it off my under eye.
Well, that seems like a
problem.
Trying
to get it off actually makes it worse.
When you say it crumbles, what do you mean by that?
So I put the mascara on. Go out and live my day. Maybe I'll rub my eyes because I'm tired. And by the end of the night, or honestly the next morning, because I never wash my face at night.
I heard Dolly Parton doesn't wash her face of makeup before she goes to bed.
That's pretty gross because she wears a lot of makeup. I don't wear any makeup usually. So anyway, this 2020 Beauty will crumble under my eyes. No problem. I'll wipe it away, except it smears. And guess what? It is water-resistant mascara.
So you can't get it off?
I can't get it off unless I use something oily and then watery. It's like a mix, and then rough tissues. It's a big disaster. But for the water resistance part, it's pretty good. And let's talk about how that happens.
Well, whenever something is going to be water resistant, it's going to have to be oily, right? Or waxy, or some sort of hydrocarbon that does not easily interact with water. Because if it interacts with water, then it can run easy.
Or a water resistant polymer like VP Icosine copolymer. That is a really popular one found in waterproof mascaras, plus the waxes and the silicones and the other items
oils,
that make it runny resistant.
Yeah, when you're formulating, if you want something to be waterproof, you essentially reduce the amount of water in the formula, and often it'll be a water-in-oil emulsion rather than an oil-in-water emulsion, which most lotions and such things are oil-in-water emulsions.
As far as waterproof or water-resistant things that can be put into the water line, I think that comes down to personal preference and experience. I actually really like the Tattoo Pencil Liner Waterproof Longwear Gel Eyeliner from Kat Von D. This was one of those accidental finds that came to me in the form of a free Sephora sample. And I was like, wow, this stuff has a lot of stay-put-iveness.
Or stick-to-itiveness, as I like to say. Now, wait a minute. It's a tattoo liner?
Well, Kat Von D is famous for her tattoos, and the name of this particular, we'll call it eyeliner, is Tattoo Pencil.
Oh.
So it's kind of like her shtick.
Sure, sure. It's not for tattoos. Or is it a tattoo of a pencil? No.
It's a really opaque liner, and I really like it. There was another one I used to love. Believe It or Not by L'Oreal, and I just can't find it anymore, so I really wish I could tell you what it was.
Well, it's interesting because sometimes things get discontinued, but we'll do that in the next question. So what's the bottom line on this one? If you want to find out what ingredients are making something water resistant, mostly it's the formula, and formula is going to include hydrocarbons or nonpolar things like waxes and silicones and oils, and also the polymer that you had mentioned. What was that again?
VP Icosine polymer.
VP Icosine, and VP is vinyl pyrrolidone, I think.
Exactly.
So look for that on your ingredient list.
Our next question is an audio question. If you want to hear your voice on the show, and you're not a patron, you can record a question on your smartphone and send it to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. Or if you're a patron, check your Patreon notifications. We have sent you our secret Google phone number.
That's right.
Good day, Valerie and Harry. My name is Tima, and I live in Maryland. I started using Tone Original Cocoa Butter Bath Bar Soap in the late 70s. I found no other general consumer products and did not completely dry out my skin and help to calm keratosis pilaris. For the Beauty Brains audience, Tone was manufactured by Henkel Corporation. Fast forward to 2024, and the website for Tone products owned by Henkel has a copyright date of 2024. The Henkel North America website lists Tone as one of the products. A link to locate hard-to-find products from Henkel actually leads to nowhere. Do you know why Henkel Corporation decided to discontinue Tone products in such an inconsistent way? Thank you for all that you do and for the great information you provide.
All right, these Tone products. Now, I was looking this up. I didn't know that this was discontinued. In fact, if I'm looking at the website, toneskincare.com, they have a lot of things, and they actually do have a picture of the soap. So I'm not so sure that this has been discontinued, at least everywhere. Maybe you can still get it some places, right?
I remember getting this soap growing up, specifically, really? The cocoa butter bath bar, because I've always loved cocoa butter. We were a bar soap family because it was generally inexpensive and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
So, well, I want to check that there, because the United States was a bar soap country. At least when I got into the industry, body wash was not a thing. And that body washes didn't really come around until
the
late 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, early 2000s. So everybody was a bar soap family growing up, not just
yours. Hard to remember, because I only knew bar soaps growing up. And in fact, I pretty much only used bar soaps into college. So I remember the Tone cocoa butter bath bar very well. And I was shocked to see this message, because I thought there's no way that's discontinued. And then I thought, you know what? I haven't seen the Tone products, which have expanded into many body washes for a very long time. And you know what? Maybe they're not discontinued, but they're sold in certain stores. And in fact, the last time I think I saw these was at a dollar store, actually.
Well, the Tone specifically has a ton of body washes, and then they just have the one soap bar. So it does seem like they're at least reducing the prevalence of that. You know, it's interesting. I looked at Henkel, because I know Henkel from the brand Dial, and that's a styling gel. Henkel also does Got to Be, which I know that's a hair styling thing. And then they have Zotos and Sexy Hair.
Schwarzkopf, Alterna, Guy Tang. It's a lot of hair-focused brands.
Right, right.
They're in the home cleaning or laundry business. Tone Skincare is really one of their only skincare brands. It doesn't play in a premium space, which their other brands typically play in. So maybe there is less emphasis on it.
Well, you can see why. That's a clue to one of the reasons that a company would discontinue a brand, because it doesn't really fit in with all of their other businesses. And unless it's selling a ton, like if it's a billion-dollar brand, which I don't think this is a billion-dollar brand, right? I barely even heard of this brand in a long time. So that's probably one of the reasons that you're having a hard time finding it. And I'm not certain that it's discontinued, because they still have a website, but they mostly sell body washes.
Well, I'm going to be on a mission now to find it, because that would be a fun challenge. And if you're listening to this show and you know where you can get the Tone skincare, specifically the bath bar, please, please, please send us a message on Instagram or Facebook and let us know so we can share the news.
Absolutely.
Our last question comes to us from Audrey. When you buy hair care products without silicones and sulfates, what are they being replaced with? Like, what exactly are these hair care companies using instead of these ingredients? If silicones and sulfates are kind of essential for that sleek, modern hair look, there's no way brands would just drop them because of some bad reputation without having a backup plan, right? What are they swapping in to do the job? Thanks. Love the show.
Well, that's an interesting question. I like this question, because somebody's out there thinking, right?
People always think something is negative for you and they don't want it in there, but they never think, what would it be replaced with?
Right. And Audrey went that extra step. So let's talk about the ingredients here. So sulfates and silicones, and specifically in terms of hair care, although they're used in skincare a bit too, but sulfates are the cleaning ingredients in shampoos. And specifically, we're talking about sodium lauryl sulfate and sodium lauryl ether sulfate. Although, when I was first in the industry, you know what was more used than SLS and SLES?
Is this a trick question?
It kind of is. It's ALS Cocosul. And ALES.
ALS. No. ALS, right. Which is ammonium lauryl sulfate or ammonium laureth sulfate, are really great for low pH cleansing systems.
Exactly. But the problem with them is in manufacturing,
they can corrode your equipment.
Corrode your equipment, right. So it was always interesting to me because Alberto Culver, we use sodium lauryl sulfate version, but Suave always used ammonium lauryl sulfate, as did Pantene and P&G. They always used ammonium.
Very interesting.
Yeah, they've all switched to sodium lauryl sulfate, or sodium lauryl, the sodium version. But anyway, whether sodium or ammonium, they pretty much work the same as far as a shampoo goes. It's just manufacturing differences. These are really, the reason they're used so much is they're the most efficient and least expensive detergents, and they pretty much were used by everybody until sulfate-free became a thing. So prior to the year 2000, I would say almost every brand, with the exception of like salon brands, was using some type of sulfate. The replacements are pretty much just a number of more expensive and less effective detergents like glucosides, taurates, isothionates, those kinds of things. So that's what you would see on your shampoos, the alpha olefin sulfonates, that kind of thing. They're going to clean the hair, of course, but they cost more and they don't really work as well, at least when you objectively measure things in the labs.
They also feel quite a bit different. Some of them leave residue on the hair. I am anti-glucosides for hair. I can't stand them. I don't think they have a place in hair care. And I also, lauryl glucosides, okay, but desyl glucoside, no way, Jose. I also think desyl glucoside has a place in skincare because it can cause contact dermatitis, but
sure.
I digress.
It was allergen of the year in 2017.
Exactly. Now, that's not saying I don't use these. I formulate shampoos all the time, and I do reach for these, but we have to keep in mind that they have some negative drawbacks. And when they're coupled with sodium lauryl sulfate or sodium lauryl sulfate, you can make a really beautiful cleansing system versus just using these alone. Plus, you can actually afford it.
Right. And you mix in a little cocamidopropyl betaine, and you got a nice, fluffy, creamy foam. All right. So that's what people are using for sulfate replacements. There are a lot of surfactants, so there's a lot of options there. Let's talk about the silicones. Honestly, there are really no good silicone replacements.
There's just no such thing like a good silicone. You can get things that are similar, but there's always a little characteristic missing.
Yeah, but the things that are being used instead, or that can kind of mimic what silicones do, are cationic surfactants like behene trimonium chloride, and then also cationic polymers like polyquaternium 10, polyquaternium 7. These can mimic the effects of what you're going to get with silicones, anti-frizz, the shine, that kind of thing.
We also use a lot of plant-based esters like isopropyl myristate or undecane or other what we call linear alkanes such as isododecane or isohexadecane. Squalane is another example, but they offer only some attributes of these spreadable silicone type products. And then when you're talking about functionalized silicones like amodimethicone for color protection, or maybe sulsesquioxane for heat protection, there aren't other ingredients that, in my opinion, just do that good of a job compared to a silicone type product.
Right. So when you're doing the replacements, you're just making products that kind of mimic what silicones can do, but they don't work as well. Now, in truth, there is a huge psychological component to how well a consumer thinks a product works. So if somebody likes how a product smells and it foams well enough, they're going to like it, whether it has a sulfate in it or not. If I gave you the greatest functioning shampoo in the world, but you didn't like the fragrance, you probably wouldn't buy it again. The fragrance is such a big driver.
That's the Redken citric acid bonding shampoo. I can't stand the fragrance. It smells like an 80-year-old dryer sheet. It's terrible. But the shampoo is wonderful. It's a really beautiful shampoo.
Right. It's such a huge thing, the fragrance. Now, consumers are also not particularly good at noticing performance differences between shampoos. And also, I would say this, before the 2000s, most shampoos didn't contain silicones. And, you know, people liked the shampoos fine enough. It was just that people really liked Pert Plus. You remember Pert Plus?
I do remember
it. That was like the original 2-in-1 from the 1980s. And then later Pantene, because P&G bought Pert Plus, and then they bought Pantene. And then when they got Pantene, they switched all of the Pantene formulas to be 2-in-1s, but they didn't say 2-in-1s. So people just liked how it worked. So everyone's buying Pantene. They don't know they're getting a 2-in-1 formula, but that's what they were getting. And people liked it. But when the patents expired to that, because that was filed in the 1980s, and by the late 2000s, that's all the patents kind of came up. Everyone's looking at how much product Pantene sells, how much Pert used to sell. And they're like, hey, let's start putting silicones in our shampoos. And that's why the industry kind of switched. So, you know, now a lot of people have been convinced that silicones are bad. So they're switching back to the old formulas.
When in reality, you know, I just don't think that they're super terrible. I mean, think of all the land raising that's going on because people are trying to put up these coconut and palm plantations. It's right. Not just palm, it's coconut as well to sure. Try to supply the world's need with what we want. And while the cosmetics industry is such a small fraction, just because it's plant-based doesn't mean it's better for the environment. So that's what I got to say about that.
So that's what's going on with those. And what's going on with that music that I'm hearing?
That's all we have time for. I have to go because I have a early call time at the factory.
Oh, and I have dinner waiting for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. If you get a chance, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. That's going to help other people find the show and ensure we have a full docket of beauty questions to answer.
And speaking of questions, if you have a question and you want to hear your voice on the show, just record it on your smartphone and email that to thebeautybrains@gmail.com. The Beauty Brains are also on Patreon. You might have noticed we don't have advertisers on here, and sometimes we say some, you know, inflammatory stuff that brands might not want you to hear. And we could only do that because we are listener supported. We don't take advertising money, at least on the show. And so if you want to help support the show, because it is not free to produce, you can go to patreon.com/thebeautybrain and subscribe. Your questions get a higher priority, and you also get a transcript of the show. And now we're going to have a special number you can call, and you can leave us a voicemail message.
8675309. Is that the,
excellent.
Is that the number? Anyway, yes. Don't forget
to call. No, that is not the number, but...
If you know your 80s music, you guys know what I'm talking about. Don't forget to follow us on our various social media accounts. On Instagram, we're at TheBeautyBrains2018. On Twitter, we're at TheBeautyBrains. We have a Facebook page and a TikTok.
You know, somebody asked us, where can we get the TikTok of TheBeautyBrains? And it is TheBeautyBrains. We just haven't produced anything. So you can follow us.
Like literally nothing.
Nothing yet. But it's coming this year, maybe.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And remember, be brainy about your beauty.
Thanks, everyone.
Kittens.